Lesson 1. What is your relationship with the present moment?
Welcome, wherever you are. It'll be here and now, no matter where or what time it is. Despite all the technology at this event, I'd like to point out that this is not a performance in any way. And the good news is I didn't have to undergo makeup procedures that are usually associated with television. Don't be distracted by the technology. It's good for once to see technology to be put to good use rather than having it in the service of human madness, which happens more frequently. But this is a very simple event, not a big thing. There's a person talking, and there's a person listening. This retreat is not going to feed your mind with information. It's not about learning new things, extending your knowledge. It's not about how to create this and that for yourself in the future. There's nothing wrong with that. But the focus of this retreat does not lie in the horizontal dimension. So it's neither about your future, nor is it about your past. It's not examining all the things that went on in your past that are now part of your conditioning. It's not looking at the future. It's not to do with the horizontal dimension of your life situation, which is past and future. My past, my future is my life situation. Everybody here has a life situation. And in most cases, a problematic life situation. And some of you may believe that it is uniquely yours, the fact that this you are, your life situation is uniquely problematic. But that's not the case, I'm sorry to say. And if your life situation, I'm not talking about your life or this moment. I'm talking about your life situation. If your life situation is not problematic right now, just wait a little. Because you may have hit the brief interlude between problematic events that sometimes occurs. And then the next thing happens. So it's in the nature of one's life situation to be problematic, and to some extent to be unresolved, to present certain dilemmas. They look like your very own personal dilemmas, but if you look underneath the surface appearance of the apparent personal dilemmas, you find they have a great deal in common with other people's dilemmas. Only the surface is a little different. Now, you can go to many workshops, and there's nothing wrong with them, they're wonderful, that are to do with how to solve your personal dilemmas, how to create a better future, how to achieve this or that. And that's fine. This is not what we are here for, however. It's not dealing with the horizontal dimension of your life, but something that most people overlook almost continuously, and that is the vertical dimension. One could say the dimension of depths, inner depths. Instead of going out that way, we are going in more deeply into the vertical, which is inseparable from what we call the now, this moment, all there ever is. The now that is usually overlooked because your attention is almost completely absorbed by the horizontal dimension, which is your life situation, your personal dilemma, your problems, and all the things of this world that demand your continuous attention. This matters. And you can feel the pull of the world as soon as you step out of the protected space of this retreat center. You feel the pull of the world pulling you this way and that way and saying, give me your attention, this really is important. And, of course, it may well be relatively important. But is it absolutely important? But even within the space, the protected space of this retreat center, the world does not leave you alone, because it also exists in your head as the continuous stream of thinking, of thought processes, and of emotions associated with those thought processes. And that is the world that is carried in your head that doesn't leave you alone, even in the protected space of the retreat center. So you could be sitting here and your attention being absorbed completely by your thought processes. Suddenly you're gone. Only the body is still here. And you will be thinking probably about your life situation. Maybe something that you will have to deal with when you get home. Maybe something that you didn't deal with when you left, before you left. And now you're thinking about it and saying, I really shouldn't have come here. He's not talking about anything important anyway. So that's, and then the thoughts have a certain momentum. Each thought is an energy form that has a temporary lifespan, not as long a lifespan as this stone or crystal, but it is a life form, a short-lived life form, not material, not physical, but it is an energetic form. So every thought has this momentum. It comes in. And that draws your attention in. It, someone could say the thoughts absorb your conscious attention almost totally. And so you go into the thought and then you get lost in the thought. Another way of putting it is you identify with the thought. You are the thought. And that is a dreadful fate of humanity. They have become their thoughts. They are so identified with thinking, they know themselves only as their thought processes. And whatever their thought processes are that go through their head, involuntary, most of them, involuntary thought processes, that's who they think they are. What their thoughts are telling you, who you are, that's who you think you are. And a lot of the thoughts are telling you what you've learned from other people, what they taught you, who you are. And that gets absorbed, it gets assimilated in childhood, and then it goes on from there. Or your reaction against what other people told you, who they are, which is another form of conditioning. So you have all that conditioned mind movement inside you, and that is the world. A more primordial, on a more fundamental level, that's the world inside you that tells you, give me all your attention. This matters, absolutely. And the emotions that are created by the thoughts and in turn energize thoughts and create more thoughts. Fear, anger, many things, continues. It's a vicious circle. Thought, emotion, because the body believes that whatever thought you have in your head is reality. Whereas most thoughts actually are not reality at all. They're what might happen, could have happened, will happen unless this, that happens. Should have happened long ago. And even that, if you completely believe in every thought, which means I'd be identified with every thought, and you think this should have happened long ago, doesn't feel good. It didn't happen. So this is called a retreat. The prefix re means back. Treat, I don't know. Maybe it's something to do with. The important thing is that it's some kind of drawing back, a treading back or whatever. Maybe a stepping back, a retreat. You retreat, one could say, there's the expression, you retreat from the world for a few days. You retreat from the external world, your life situation. But only from the external aspects of your life situation. The question is whether, as you are here, you can retreat from the inner life situation, the thought movement. Can you take a step back from your thoughts, your movement of thoughts, instead of believing in each thought? Instead of being totally drawn into each thought, and then every thought proliferates and becomes a stream of associated thoughts. And then that comes to an end. And then the next one comes up. And you didn't catch the tiny gap in between the two thoughts, because the mind says, that's not important, there's nothing happening there. That doesn't solve my problems, the gap between thoughts, says the mind. And yet in the gap lies the deepening. There's the vertical dimension. So we are here to allow something to arise inside you that in many of you is already happening. In some of you, it's happening without you really having recognized that it's happening. The arising of something different from the continuous stream of thinking. In many of you, it's happening and you know it. And then you get drawn back into thought and then it's there again. In others, and you may only, some of you may only recognize as you sit here during this time that, yes, it's has already happened, is already happening to me. I hadn't recognized it. And in others, this may be an opportunity for it to emerge for the first time. Of course, I haven't defined yet what exactly that is, nor do I need to do that right now. And never mistake a definition for it. So there are people who it's happening and they know it. It has already it's emerging. It's a process of emergence. Or it's happening and they don't know it yet, as beginning to recognize it. Or it could happen here for the first time. Or we have a fourth category of people. It just isn't happening. And if you survive these 3 days here when it just isn't happening, then I congratulate you, because it will be very hard to sit through this for 3 days. What is he talking about? I could hear one mind asking that question. The arising of a new dimension of consciousness. And when I say that, even that's not quite right. But we have to use words. A new dimension of consciousness arising in and through you, human beings. Perhaps just in time to save humanity or the planet, perhaps. Just in time before what has become a form of collective insanity. The beginnings go back thousands and thousands of years. Even the Buddha saw the collective insanity already and said that was 2,600 years ago. And he said, you are in misery all the time. Why? Why are you so miserable? And even your happiness is miserable because it lasts such a short time and then you're unhappy again. The very thing that makes you happy today makes you unhappy tomorrow. That's why you're miserable all the time. This is my new translation of the Buddhist sutras. And in recent times, that human mind, that what one could call dysfunction in the human mind, yes, the human mind has created great things too, but whenever it has created something truly magnificent, it's never been just the human mind, it's been the human mind connected to a deeper realm. And then the human mind became an instrument through which it was not where the creativity, the creation came from. That came from the vertical, the dimension of depth in the artists or the whatever they created. Every creative utterance comes from there. Anything creative comes from the depth that is there within you. The greater intelligence that is concealed in that dimension of depth in you that is underneath the continuously, the incessant stream of thinking. People don't know what treasure there is hiding underneath that. And the more you, the better you are at thinking, the harder it gets to step beyond thinking. So it's very hard for a university professor who has continuously used his or her mind and polished it and added more and more to it to step out of that. And they come, what's, okay, define this, what do you mean by that? It's all just, the mind is trying to grasp something that has nothing to do with thinking. It is deeper. It can then inform thought. It can flow into thought also. And then thought is a beautiful thing. But when you're not connected to the dimension of the vertical in yourself, thought becomes very quickly barren and dysfunctional. Because an entire identity arises in you. Identity means your sense of who you are, your sense of self. An entire identity arises that is based on thought movement, who you are. Continuously telling this inner monologue or dialogue that goes on. So you're talking to yourself. Oh, you're so good. You're not good enough. You should be. Why don't you shoot along? Others are so much better. I love myself. I hate myself. I don't like myself. I can't stand myself anymore. And yet, yourself is the stream of thinking. Which you're really saying is, I cannot stand my stream of thinking anymore. But you confused it with who you are, which is underneath that, the dimension of depth. So that, we are here to allow that to emerge, that dimension of consciousness, which we could call the unconditioned, because the whole stream of thinking is conditioned by the past. And the entire sense of who you are, of identity, of me, that is associated with thinking, is conditioned by the past. It's a conditioned entity, conditioned by your environment. If you had been born in Iraq, the structure of your thoughts would be very similar. The content would be different. It would be working along the same structures. So the content, I believe in this and I believe in that. The structure is that you identify with a belief. I am a such and such. You say religion, profession, status in society, nationality, male, female. I am a few words. Jum, 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 jum. Put them together, little bundle. That's who I am. I'm an ex such and such. I'm a so-and-so survivor. You have survived something, which is wonderful, because humans go through dreadful things and they survive. But then make it into an identity, or the main, the focal point of your sense of self, you're going into identifying with a mental image, which is thought. That's who I am. Some people have grievances, which are thoughts associated with thoughts and emotions going together. They carry grievances towards one particular person, may not even be alive anymore, my ex this or that, or a group of people, or another nation, or another religion, or some other church within your religion, or some other people, some other color or race, or ideology. grievances. So, and that you, and for some, that is the focal point of their sense of self, their grievance against. So when communism was still alive, well, in some places it still is, in Russia, people got indoctrinated with certain thoughts. And many people, not all, believed those thoughts. And so they believed in, this is who we are. So their sense of self, I am a communist. The collective identity was an important part of a person's sense of identity. And then communism collapsed. And I read it that in East Germany, when communism collapsed, they didn't have enough psychiatrists. There was enormous mental confusion in people, and also suicides. And the psychiatrists they would have needed 100 times more psychiatrists than they had to deal with all the people who were totally confused. What, all the things that we thought we were is suddenly not true anymore? What is going on? Who are, and the fear that comes with that, and I don't know who I am anymore. And that is a dysfunction, to derive your identity from a few thoughts. Because that's ultimately what it is. A few thoughts that you identify with, and that is the me. And then that fragile edifice, you try to, because you deep down everybody knows that it feels so insecure, this little me based on thought. That's called the ego, by the way. And so the ego looks out for more to add to the insufficient sense of self, because every sense of self that is mind-based is insufficient, even if it looks confident on the surface. Deep down, there's a sense of not insufficient means not enough, or not enough yet to be myself. I do not have enough yet, have not achieved enough yet, don't know enough yet, have not experienced enough yet, to be fully and completely myself. And so with that comes the deep need embedded in every human being that has not stepped beyond, the deep need for more to fulfill me. On whatever level, some people seek it here, others seek it there. You may seek it on the level of possessions. You may seek it on the level of achievement, on the level of relationships, how many boyfriends or girlfriends or experiences. And people come here perhaps also looking for more to add to me. The sense of self, the mind-based sense of self, which is so hungry. Overeating is only a physical expression of the need for more. That is basically a psychological need. So this means you eat more than the body needs to fill that deep-seated longing for more. And then you can have it, you consume entertainment. We have whole industries catering to the psychological need for more that fills your mind up continuously with more things going on, events, useless information, continuous chatter. Switch on the radio and it goes in an excited voice. What's he saying? Nothing really. He's just filling you up with more thoughts. Insignificant. And so people cannot stand not getting more. Not getting more so results in very quick a sense of frustration, of boredom, of even fear. which is what you may experience occasionally here, because the need for more is not really met in this situation. We are here to discover that to be fully yourself, to feel a sense of rootedness, a deep rootedness in life, in being, that the world of nature still has. Because nature does not have dilemmas or problematic life situations. It may suffer, but it's not a problem. It's not a dilemma. And when an animal suffers, it suffers. A cat just rests until it gets better, stays very quiet. No complaining. Some animals that live closely with humans become complainers also. They learn that from the human mind, which loves complaining. But many animals remain sane despite that. And so you can learn from them. You can see how deeply rooted they are in life. There's a fundamental deep trust in life that humans, most of them, don't have anymore. They don't feel truly rooted within themselves, rooted in being. A deep sense of aliveness and peace. The purring of the cat. The cat is in touch with something very beautiful when it purrs. It's a sense of delight in being alive. Bliss. And humans can have that also. And I'm not talking about a superficial feeling of, oh, isn't that great? I'm not even talking about being happy all the time. Everything is soft. There are no problems. And it's not pretending. It's not saying, oh, no. No, it's deeper than that. The possibility of living from a deeper place than the stream of thinking. And from there comes whatever you need on the level, the external level, even in your future, comes out of that. If you are connected with that, that inner, any word that we use is a limitation, of course, of it. That's why in India, just to get some approximation of what this is, they use three words and string them together as if it were one to describe the state of connectedness with being. The three words are Satchitananda. Sat means being. The delight of being. The delight of life, which nature has. But when we look at nature, we always see the struggle for survival. Yes, that also exists on the level of form, but there's also the delight in life that everything in nature, every animal and every plant still has. And I have observed birds, other animals, and I see how they delight in doing. They're not continuously fighting or looking for food. Yes, also, they're also looking for food. They are Many times when they're simply delighted, when the eagle soars from where I live, I sometimes observe eagles high overhead, their wings stretched out, they hardly ever move. They use the air so skillfully that they don't need to make any effort. They can be for 20 minutes without ever moving their wings and just go. And they are not looking for food. I looked at them. They're not looking for anything. They're in a state of delight. Just watching. Consciousness, the one consciousness expressing itself through this form and delighting in the life of form that it observes, that it is part of. Sat being, the delight of being alive, which is more than that. There is only one perspective on it. Chit, consciousness. Ah. To know yourself not as thought, which is a form that consciousness takes, to know yourself as that which underlies all thought, out of which every thought and every emotion comes, that which allows the thought and the emotion to be there, which is consciousness itself before it becomes something, before it becomes a thought or an emotion or a body or a sense of me or a flower or an animal or the earth, the sun or the galaxy, before it is born into form. The moment prior to what scientists call the Big Bang, which is the birth of form, the universe, before the birth of form, scientists are puzzled. They cannot work out, okay, it all started with the Big Bang. Now, but what was there before that? If there was nothing, where did it all come from? If you start thinking about it, you will soon go mad. How did the whole universe come out of nothing, if there was nothing? Out of complete empty space. Now that realm, the strange thing is, that which was there before the Big Bang, out of which the entire universe arose, was never lost and still dwells in each form as the innermost essence of that form. And the Buddhists call that emptiness. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form. And that is in you also. Ah, that is the dimension that is unconditioned, timeless, no past, no future, eternal, which does not mean goes on and on. It means no time, not endless time. Eternal does not mean endless time. It means no time, not subject to time. Consciousness itself. And all that humans know, most humans, all they know is the objects that arise in their consciousness, which is the world of form, the world of birth and death. They know the objects, sense objects, mental objects that arise continuously, and most humans are identified only with that, that they know nothing else. So they know only the world of form, the conditioned, time-bound, past, future. On a personal level, all they know is their life situation and the continuous stream of thinking. That's what a life. Now, if we want to use theistic language, We could say, you're totally concerned with the world and you don't know God. God not as an entity, controlling entity somewhere in space. No. But that the unmanifested life out of which the entire world of manifestation arises. The unmanifested that contains everything in a state of oneness. So your life is totally incomplete, no matter what you achieve on the level of form, and everybody who has achieved great things on the level of the world knows that after a little while, you feel elated for a little while when you suddenly become a VIP and see your picture in magazines or whatever it is, and then after a little while it feels, the same old things come creeping back. Not enough fear, I might lose it, what do they think? My reputation, the stock market, what's going to happen to me? And deep down they know that all their achievements are going to leave them unless they leave them first. It's either the question of, I leave the stock market, which means I die before it all collapses, or it collapses while I'm still alive. In either case, it's all going to leave. Oh my God. And the famous actor or actress knows that deep down that my appearance isn't going to last and eventually they won't want to see me anymore. Oh. So whatever you achieve on the level of form cannot satisfy for long. The not enough remains. The sense of insufficiency remains. So you forgot something. You forgot an entire half of life, one could almost say. You've got the manifested half. This is only a temporary way of putting it. Don't get attached to it. There's the manifested half, and you entirely neglect it. The unmanifested. You paid all your attention to the world, but nothing to God. And don't get attached to that, please. Another way of putting it, you could say, if in this room, you see all the objects in this room, the people, the ceiling, the lights, and so on, and the objects absorb your attention, this and that. Oh, look at that, and that, and that, and that. And then the walls and the ceiling. And you don't realize that the essence of this room is actually not the walls and the ceiling and whatever is in the room, but the space itself. Without the space, it would be useless. There wouldn't be enough space to sit here. So when people describe the room, they would usually just describe the appearance of the ceiling, the walls, and so on, perhaps give you the measurements. Forget to mention the space completely, because they are not aware of it. That the very essence they didn't mention. This room is worthless if you just put together the objects in the room. And so in each human being, there's the equivalent of that. There are the objects that make up your consciousness, all the thought movements and the emotions. They're born and they die. They're born and they die. Like, and so in most cases, that is what absorbs your attention completely. And don't realize that underneath the continuous movement of thought, there is a spaciousness. A sense of stillness, another pointer. Stillness, spaciousness, aliveness, delight, ananda, bliss, delight, being, consciousness, bliss, satchit, ananda, is living in connectedness with that. More than that, knowing yourself as that, not as something that arises in you and takes form. You are the infinite space. The entry point into that is always the present moment. The point of entry into that dimension in yourself is this moment. Now, to be in this moment truly, you need to allow this moment to be. And that's for most humans an unusual thing to do. Because most people live in such a way, and you have to be aware of it if it happens in you, they live in such a way as if, and I'm going to, what I'm saying now, you can immediately recognize as a form of insanity. They live in such a way as if the present moment were an obstacle that they need to overcome. And a large, most part of their lives is they are trying to overcome the obstacle of this moment, which means they need to get to the next one where they believe this obstacle will have disappeared. The next moment, which of course never arrives, because your entire life can only ever be this moment, which then remains a continuous obstacle that you need to get beyond, but never get beyond. If that's not insanity, what is? But it's normal. So we don't need to be good at mathematics, which I'm not, to then find the equation normal equals insane. Maybe a little bit extreme, but ultimately true. If normal were not insane, human history would be very different from the way it is. If normal were not insane, what you would hear on the news would be different from what you hear every day on the news. Well, so the present moment then is not an obstacle. The present moment is not my enemy, another way of putting it. I don't want this. This shouldn't be happening. I don't want to be here. I don't want to have to deal with this. Why isn't it? Why are we still waiting here? Why? When is it going to happen?
What's the next thing you have to do? Have you done that? Why haven't you done that? Come, the next thing, and the next thing. Go into families, see how they talk to their children. The next, they're almost breathless because they're always running after the next thing, and they're telling their children to do the same thing. Okay, now deal with, have you done that? Come on, do it. And then if they get totally exhausted, they sit in the sofa and then switch on the screen. And what they watch on the screen is the people going through that same behavior. But for a moment it feels good because it sends you into a kind of semi-trance-like state because they have their problems and they're not mine. But nobody questions whether to live like that is sane or not. Very rarely. Occasionally these days the truth comes through here and there, even in through the media. Occasionally. In certain films, occasionally, even on television, occasionally. But mostly, it's a reflection of the collective dysfunction of the human mind. So this moment, this is the theme of our retreat. Throughout the retreat and the times when you're not here are as important as the times when you're here. And that's only a way of putting it, because no matter whether you sit here, whether you're walking from here to your room, or whether you're sitting in your room or in the dining hall or amongst the beautiful trees, the trails, the lake, it's always now. I can guarantee and predict that no matter where you find yourself here, it will be this moment. Now, our retreat here is to find out, to be attentive, to be alert, in order to know what your relationship is, so to speak, with the present moment. While you're here, in the moment, what is your relationship to this moment? Are you embracing it, whatever form it takes? The forms change. A new person appears in front of you. The mouth opens, speaking happens. Then the person goes. Then steps happen. A tree is there, the beautiful colors. And the next thing comes. What is your relationship to this moment? Particularly, see if you can detect any way in which you avoid this moment, where you are ahead of the moment to some future moment. That could be when you're walking between here and your room, that mentally you're already in your room doing what you're going to do there. And you don't see, while you walk, this beautiful moment, the incredible beauty around you, you don't see it at that moment because you're already doing in your room what you're going to do there. Or even worse, you're thinking about what you will have to do when you get home. Back to your life situation and the dilemma on the problems. Where's the now? What now? No, I need to get home to deal with all that stuff. What am I still doing here? And then you wake up at that moment and you discover your relationship to the present moment. It was one of denial.
You don't exist. You're not important at all. Something else is more important. It's some future moment. And that's what I need to think about. The future, of course, is only a mind form. The only place where you can ever encounter the future is in your head. This is such a revolutionary thought, a revolutionary realization, and not even the greatest scientists or philosopher could argue with that. The only place where you ever encounter the future is in your head. Well, yeah, it has to be. Of course it's true. And this, of course, also applies to the past. The only place you can ever encounter the past is in your head. And, yes, also to some extent as an emotional accumulation in your body, but even that you can only feel at this moment. But whenever you remember the past, it's only the power of now, your consciousness now, that is bringing it to life. You can only think of it now. You cannot think of the past yesterday. And what you think of didn't happen in the past, because nothing can happen in the past. You can't. Now is the prerequisite for being, for life. There's no life apart from now. There cannot be. And now what this now is, we will go into deeper and deeper here. It's in you. There's such depth to now. And whenever we talk about now, we have to approach it through language. Through a language which is based on time. Every word, every sentence. And so contradictions arise because we are using something from the world of time to describe something that is beyond time. And then even when I say we are going to go deeper into the now, it sounds a little silly. But that's an inevitable contradiction that arises. It's only because we're using words. But to truly see that there is no future apart from this moment. The future that you think is so threatening or important that you need to sort out has no existence. And if you realize the primordial importance of the present moment, make that the focal point of your life when we start with this retreat, and you may find that the quality of your life improves so dramatically when you are attentive to this moment and allow it to be. The quality of your life improves so dramatically, and quality is difficult, hard to define. There's then a quality in everything around you that you perceive, that you do. Even when you speak not out of denial of the present moment, but being fully rooted in the present moment, there's a quality to what you say, because the words, which are thoughts that become words, arise from a deeper level that you are now connected with. When you say yes to this moment, that's the entire spiritual practice. See if you can be in a state of yes to this moment, no matter what form this moment takes. And because this moment takes on so many different forms, people have fallen into the delusion to think that their life consists of millions of moments. And another moment, and another moment, and that past moment, future. No, there's only one moment ever, but the form it takes changes. Continuously. So what is your relationship to this moment? Do you deny it? Do you resist it? Are you in a state of inner contraction? Want to be somewhere else in place or time? mentally go elsewhere totally, which is denial of now. Miss it. Are you missing? You miss your entire life if you miss the aliveness of this moment. So what comes is an alertness. What I sometimes call the state of presence is a state of alert attention, relaxed alertness. As you open yourself to the now, as you begin to live in a yes relationship to the present moment, and particularly when something comes in that before you would have rejected, denied, complained about, or run away from internally. In other words, something arises in the now that the mind says, that shouldn't be happening. The soup is cold. It should be hot. But at this moment, the reality is, I'm giving a very simple example. I could give the most dramatic examples of the same dysfunction. It can become the cold soup that you are complaining about internally. I'm not saying, by the way, that the soup here is cold, but you could complain internally about they really shouldn't be. So, I'm paying all this money, and what am I getting here? Cold soup. This is just a neutral example, I think. So, I'm paying all this. All I'm getting is this cold soup. They should. I'm going to talk to someone about it, and you're eating it. But there's an enormous amount of complaining about it inside. And something in you loves that. What is that that loves going on about it? And if you can find somebody you can talk to, who can agree with you, you can energize each other mutually. Did you taste that soup too? Wasn't it dreadful? Oh, yeah, absolutely dreadful. Now, a very different thing is taking it to the kitchen and say, oh, the soup is cold, would you mind heating it up again, please? No problem. You're not even complaining. You're simply stating a fact. You're not going, if you go to the kitchen and say, how dare you save me this cold soup? You are in a state of resistance to what is. Because what is the cold soup. And you can substitute anything in your life. And there are far worse things than cold soup. So you are in a state of resistance to the isness of this moment, which is the cold soup. So there is the non-dysfunctional, non-effective way of dealing with it, which is, for example, to complain internally and to someone else, to hope to get some feedback. Yes, you're right. Which something in you loves, and what is it that loves that? It's the mind-made egoic entity, the me. That consists of thought forms that are never enough. And because the thought form of me is never enough, what it loves is to be right about something, because it can add the position of rightness temporarily to its sense of self. I'm absolutely right about this cold soup. And now, of course, somebody has to be wrong, and it's the kitchen staff and the whole place, and it's the people who, all the chefs of the world, whatever madness you can think, somebody has to be wrong, and so there's something satisfying in living in a state of resistance or denial of the isness of the present moment. That's why it is so all pervasive in humans,
there must be some payoff when they continuously resist and complain and deny the present moment. And what is the payoff? It's unconscious, of course. When you make it conscious, you're beginning to step out of it. And this is why it's good here to look at it, because it may come up in you even as you're here, not necessarily the cold soup. It'll be something else. There's hardly ever a situation that does not bring up certain things of that kind. So, the isness of this moment, at this moment, there is nothing you can do about the cold soup, because it, you cannot argue with isness. It is cold. What do you want? It is. Is. So that is your, what is your relationship then to the isness of this moment? You reject, you say, this is how it is. It's cold. Then, of course, you have a choice. You're free. You can eat the cold soup and say, that tastes okay too. Or you can say, it doesn't taste good, but I'm eating it anyway. Or you can take it to the kitchen, say, could you please heat up this soup? It's cold. Without falling into the delusion that you are right and somebody else is wrong, and attempting to strengthen your self, sense of self by making someone wrong. How dare you? You personalize the whole thing. When you do that, how dare you serve me this cold soup? Me. And so to the ego, that is very satisfying. It doesn't feel good. The body knows that it doesn't feel good when you're in that state. The body, if you could examine the physiological things that accompany that state, you would see that it doesn't, it affects the blood circulation, it affects the heart, it affects your breathing, it affects the entire energy field of your body, which is contracted. And now imagine humans living most of their lives in such states of denial. What that does to the body also, just that's just a small thing compared to what it does to their well-being. My God. So watch out for the things that would usually create a response of resistance. And see if you can allow this moment to be whatever form it takes, whether you can recognize the isness as something that it would be mad to argue with. And if anything needs to be changed about the isness of this moment, very effective action arises out of the state of non-resistance. Far more powerful, far more effective than any action that comes out of the state of denial or resistance of the present moment. So, it's not that you become a doormat, that anybody can do anything to you and you say, oh, that's fine. It's not that. It's not that. Very often a no may come. No, I'm not eating this soup because it is cold. No. Powerful no. So when I say yes to this moment, which is our practice here, it's easy to mistake that for believing, and then believe that you have to say yes continuously, externally. That's fine. Can you give me $1,000 right now? Oh, yes, of course. Because I always say yes to the present moment. And is it okay if I buy drink and drugs with this? Yes, it's fine. Go ahead. Anytime. Or somebody stops, you're waiting for the bus, somebody stops, you can smell the alcohol and says, you want a ride? Do you say yes because you say always yes to the present moment? No. You say, no, thank you. What you don't say is, how dare you offer me a ride. You're completely drunk. You should. You might even say, get out of the car, you are drunk. And it might work, it will be powerful. Step out, walk home. Maybe he'll do it. Right action arises out of that, and sometimes a very powerful no. But it doesn't mean that you resist what is. What is this person is asking you for money, let's say. And he's asking you 10 times already. You've given twice, and he never gives anything back. And then the time comes, just, can I have another? No, I'm not giving you anymore. Oh. Internally, you're not resisting that. You accept the fact that this man is asking for money. That's what he does. That's his conditioning. He can't help it. But that's what he does. So that's the isness of the present moment, is this person wanting that from you. And what arises then out of the state of acceptance of this isness is not some kind of inner rejection of this person even. In a wider sense, when you accept this moment, every human being that comes into the space of now is also accepted as they are, which doesn't mean that you do whatever they want you to do. But they are accepted, and if their behavior is dysfunctional, conditioned, that's how it is. And you say no, if no arises. No. And it's a non-reactive no, powerful no, no, no. And that's quite beautiful too. So out of the inner yes to what is, may occasionally arise an external no to the situation, which doesn't mean you reject internally what is at all. So you become very, very powerful. You become a power that is greater than the conditioned force that is in the human mind can act through you when you live in alignment with the isness of this moment. Inner alignment with is, and do not argue with it. You recognize that you cannot. What is at this moment as it is, and cannot be otherwise at this moment. It doesn't mean you cannot act, change, help. But it right now, that is. And that, what we see as an event, we isolate it by calling it an event, something that happens. But if you could see on a deeper level that there is no isolated event anywhere in the universe, the totality of the universe brings about this so-called event. The form that this moment takes cannot be otherwise it wouldn't be. It's connected to everything else, all the totality. So what is inevitable. It doesn't mean that now you cannot act, that now you cannot help. But you have recognized, first of all, the inevitability of this. So the action that arises and the energy that you bring to it is one of enormous empowerment, which you were cut off from when you denied the power of this moment. When you denied this moment, you denied also the power that lies concealed in this moment. When you deny the form that this moment takes, you deny the enormous power that's concealed underneath it. And that becomes very obvious and very so incredible when something really dreadful happens in your life. And it may be that there's no action that you can take. Sometimes you say yes to this moment, but you know that action arises and you do something to change. You fall into a river, it's cold, and then you get out if you can. And then you are there shivering. That's how it is. You don't bring a whole level of psychological suffering onto it. It's enough to be cold and shivering. Why do you need to suffer on top of that?
It's just shiver. It's cold. But there's nobody in the head complaining about it. It's just the moment you complain, you personalize the whole thing. You become a victim of circumstances in your own mind. You become somebody who needs to be right as against circumstances. And you strengthen the whole dysfunction. And what kind of action can arise out of that? Further dysfunctional action. It's called karma. The end of karma is to live in alignment, not to react against the present moment. Respond to the needs of the now, yes. Not react against the form that this moment takes. Because karma, the word in Sanskrit, means action, action and reaction. That becomes a wheel, so it's pictured as a continuous wheel. You step out of this wheel of action, reaction, reaction. So what are you reacting against? The form that this moment takes. I don't like it. There's something wrong with it. Shouldn't be happening. With that little thing, everything, your entire life shifts when your relationship to the present moment shifts. Then the future, the so-called future, looks after itself, because what we call future is just is now. It comes out of now, the form. Jesus tried to get that. He said, look, why are you concerned about what's going on? Look at the flowers, how they live, how beautifully closed they are. Look at the birds. They're not worried. They're not anxious. See how they live, free of problems, free of dilemma, not concerned about tomorrow. Learn how to live from nature, he said. Look at the birds and the flowers, see how they live. You can live like that too. And your beauty will be even greater than the beauty of the flower, which is very great. There's a beauty in you that is even greater. And that, all that emerges. And then all the things that you think you need, they will come to you. The moral, in the old translation of the New Testament, it says, the moral will take care of the things for itself. When you live in such a way, that comes first. It's, so people get this wrong. They think, okay, the moral will take care of everything. Not unless you live in alignment with now. Then your life unfolds. There is an intelligence that comes into your life through you, and out of that, that also affects the external circumstances of your life, and it even affects your life situation, the dilemma and the problems. Not that a certain amount of change will ever disappear. Things will come and things will leave you. Things will come into your life and things will dissolve. That must continue in the world of form. But that can unfold much more harmoniously when you live in alignment with is. And so that's our practice here. Many of you are already practicing. You try it out here. It requires alertness. It requires you to be alert to see what your relationship is to the present moment at this moment. So you need a certain degree of alertness is needed.
Lesson 1, continued on Disc 2.